Hey, it's Motley Fool Money co-host Dylan Lewis here. If you're listening to us, it's because you love following the stock market and learning about business stories. If you're looking to keep learning and unlocking your potential, then you should check out the Think Fast, Talk Smart podcast produced by our friends over at the Stanford Graduate School of Business. Think Fast, Talk Smart is the Webby Award-winning best business podcast that's received nearly 43 million downloads and is the number one career podcast in 95-plus countries, so you know it's worth your time. Each week, host and Stanford lecturer Matt Abraham sits down with experts to discuss the best tips to hone and develop your communication skills, from making small talk that leaves a big impression, to keeping your nerves in check while speaking, to being more persuasive. Whether you're working on your elevator pitch or planning an important meeting, strong communication skills are important in business and life in general. That's why you'll hear from pros like neuroscientist Andrew Huberman on how to manage speaking anxiety, as well as speechwriter, best-selling author, and friend of the Fool, Dan Pink, on how to take risks in your communication, and psychologist Kelly McGonigal on how to harness nervous energy to fuel powerful presentations. All that and so much more available on the Think Fast, Talk Smart podcast. So what are you waiting for? Listen every Tuesday, wherever you get your podcasts or on YouTube.
One company is walking the walk on AI, and another company is getting ready for its debut in the public markets. Motley Fool Money starts now. I'm Chris Hill. Joining me in studio, Motley Fool senior analyst Jason Moser. Happy Monday.
Addy.
I'm excited about a potential IPO. And potential, I mean, barring something unforeseen, Cava, the Mediterranean restaurant chain, will be going public later this year. They have filed the requisite paperwork. I think we talked about this on Market Foolery 5 years ago, because Cava is a private company, but in 2018 they bought Zoe's Kitchen, which was a publicly traded chain that was struggling, and $300 million is the price tag I remember. And I think we said at the time, it kind of seems like they're just going to, they're basically buying the real estate. They're going to turn all of these Zoe's Kitchens into Cava's, which they have methodically done. To the extent that you've had the chance to look over the S-1 filing, what stands out to you about this? I mean, I'm excited about it because it's a restaurant I've been to. That's how my animal brain works.
What would you say you frequent more, Cava or Chipotle?
Chipotle, yeah. But it's a location based thing for me. If there was a Cava closer to me than currently exists, I'd be going there more often.
Yeah, where I live, they're kind of like right next door to each other almost. And I probably favor, I would say I personally favor Chipotle a little bit more, but Cava's right there.
Yeah. And it's the same restaurant concept. It's just for those who are like, what's Cava? I've never been there. It's Chipotle with Mediterranean food.
Exactly. And much like I've learned how to make my own Chipotle burrito bowls at home, I've done very much the same thing with Cava. So, I mean, from that perspective, they're onto something. They make good food. And you're right. The acquisition of Zoe's back in, 2018, I guess, it gave them, ultimately, that intention was the portfolio of real estate. It wasn't to roll in another restaurant concept and be Cava and Zoe's. So this has ultimately been a multi-years-long transition to basically rid the market of Zoe's, make them all Cava's, and so far it's working okay. Cava just opened up their 263rd restaurant, and that's along with making all of these Zoe's transitions along the way. They should have 300 Cava's by the end of the year. So it's still, I mean, when you look at it compared to something like a Chipotle, still a much smaller concept today, which for investors, I think that's encouraging, right? I mean, one of the big problems you see with so many of these IPOs, with these companies like Uber and Airbnb, is they're going public and they're already so big, you have to question how much growth is actually there. In the case of Cava, it's going public. It will still be relatively small. Good to know that they intend to use the proceeds from the offering for new restaurant openings and in general corporate purposes, so this doesn't sound like it's to pay off someone else. But I mean, you know, the company itself is, I wouldn't say I'm all in, but I definitely I'm interested to learn more. I mean, reading through this S-1, I mean, the business itself has grown very quickly. The Kava revenue, and I'm just excluding, you know, the Zoes for a second here, but Kava revenue has grown from $41.2 million in fiscal 2016 to $448.6 million in fiscal 2022. I mean, that's just under a 50% CAGR there. Digital revenue, around 35% of sales, which is really strong. You look at the stores themselves, very productive, $2.4 million in average unit volume in 2022. And you compare that to something like a Chipotle, which is their goal is try to push it beyond $3 million this year and next. So a lot of similarities there, but clearly Kava much, much smaller and still kind of just getting the growth engine going.
In the interest of full disclosure, this is, I think of this as a local business. Brett Schulman, who's the co-founder and CEO, is here in the greater D.C. area. Does not have the he has the experience of running this business for the past 13 years. He does not have the experience of running a public company.
Yeah.
But I believe Ron Shaikh's group made an investment in Kava Group to help fund that Zoe's acquisition. I think I have that right. And Ron Shaikh, who ran Panera all those years, I mean, I'm assuming he is advising and helping Schulman as he prepares to be a public company CEO. And you're right. They, you know, it seems a little bit like a Goldilocks S-1. I mean, do you want to look for the good or do you want to look for the bad? You know, on the bad side, it's like they've been operating at a loss since 2016.
Yeah.
But as you said, they appear to be planning to use the money in the right way. There is this opportunity, and you know, the question on my mind is this the next Chipotle or is this the next Sweetgreen? Because one of those is a much better investment than the other.
Yes, you are right. So far, that is the case. And I'm going to have to defer my answer here.
Oh yeah, we're not going to know.
I don't know. I mean, I am hopeful that this is more Chipotle than not. You know, looking at some comparables again, you kind of look at these two businesses side by side to see where one is and where one could go one day. Looking at loyalty members, for example. I mean, Kava, as of April of this year, they had approximately 3.7 million. Chipotle's got 33 million, right? You look at, again, I had mentioned just the sales per store year in and year out. But looking at the market opportunity itself, right? I mean, you see Chipotle with something better than 3,000 stores today versus Kava with hoping to have 300 by the end of the year. In longer term, they see that there's a market for 1,000 or more stores by 2032. And so I think if you're looking at it from the investing perspective today, I mean, that's, you know, a fair timeline there. Let's kind of look at this thing out over the next decade and see where it could go. I mean, if they get to 1,000 stores by then, I mean, it's certainly possible. It's a far more competitive landscape today than it was back when Chipotle came to market. But, I mean, you have 1,000 stores, and maybe they can bring in $2.5 million in revenue per store. I mean, you got a business there bringing in $2.5 billion in revenue, and you compare that to the margins of the Chipotle, maybe it's bringing in $250,000 or $250 million in net income by that point. Nothing to sneeze at there, but it would definitely take some time to get there.
One more interesting wrinkle about this business that I think investors will want to watch is they have a consumer product division.
I am glad you brought that up.
They, you know, unlike Chipotle, unlike Sweetgreen, there are hundreds of locations across America that sell, you know, Kava dips, hummus, all that sort of thing. So it'll be interesting to watch that part of the business and to the extent that they can grow not just the footprint in terms of locations, but maybe the product suite as well.
Yep, I'm glad you brought that up because that really does play into their growth strategy. I mean, the growth strategy is to open up stores in existing markets, to open up stores in new markets, and then to try to grow this CPG business. Now, is it elite? I don't know. We'll find out in time. But we've seen other companies do a pretty good job with this, right? And you look at something like a Panera or a Starbucks that have been done pretty well getting that CPG business out there. With Cava today, I mean, it's you know, their Cava dips, spreads, dressings. I think they sell in more than 650 grocery stores nationwide, including Whole Foods markets. Now, Whole Foods, as we know, owned by Amazon. You just never know. There can be interesting tie-ups there in regard to distribution that could help take this thing to another level. But primarily, the growth is Cava in that CPG segment. It doesn't mean that management can't pursue other opportunities later, but remember what happened with Chipotle, whether it was ShopHouse or whether it was Pizzeria Locale, all of these different ideas of being able to take that sort of throughput format into different concepts. We saw how that worked out with them. If we saw Cava's management indicating they wanted to go that direction, I feel like, you know, hey, it's what, fool me once, shame on you, but fool me twice, right? I think I'd look at that one a little bit more closely and maybe not give them as much credit up front for that if they decided to go that way.
It is another big week for retail earnings. Last week we had Walmart, Target, Home Depot. This week we've got Costco, Lowe's, Best Buy, Gap. I was saying to you this morning, last week, not awesome. not, you know, not necessarily terrible, but not awesome. And I'm curious if you think there's any reason to think what we're going to see this week is dramatically different, either to the upside or the downside. And I'll just throw out there that the commentary that we got last week around consumer discretionary spending and big ticket items, particularly from Home Depot, really makes me worried for Best Buy.
That's what they do, right? I don't think many people are going to Best Buy for DVDs anymore, are they?
Not for a while now.
I don't expect really any surprises. I think we're probably going to get information that more or less reinforces what we just learned last week. And ultimately, my takeaway from last week, while it wasn't, and I don't know if there are any operations out there really lit the world on fire. I mean, we're certainly seeing this move from products to services. But what we're also seeing, and I think this is a light at the end of the tunnel here, is we're starting to see inventory levels get back to normal. We're starting to see retail inventory levels come back down. And so some examples, I mean, Target's inventory down 16%, TJX down 8%, Walmart down 9.4%, Ross stores down 16%, Home Depot was even flat. But ultimately what that means is, you know, we've been talking about this excess of inventory over the past year plus, and these companies having to really resort to deals in order to just move this stuff. The longer it sits on those shelves, the more obsolete it becomes. It becomes a real challenge. So it's encouraging to see these inventory levels coming back down. Maybe things are starting to normalize, and we're kind of working our way through this COVID hangover.
I said this to Bill Mann the other day, and I'm going to say it to you now. This is not my last episode of Motley Fool Money. It's not your last, but it is our last together. I just wanted to thank you again for being so game to do the show so many times. I think we've been in the studio together more than anyone else, and I really appreciate that. So thank you for that.
Well, I could go on, and I'm not gonna because I'd probably get a little bit teary. But you're right. I think we probably have been at this together more than anyone here, and that was just because of the good fortune when I got here to just fall ass backwards into this concept that you and Mac had come up with back when it was just market foolery, and it was not in the job description when I was hired. I can't tell you how grateful I am to have these past 13 plus years with you because it's been a lot of fun. You have made me a better investor, but really, at the end of the day, you're just a great friend, and I'm going to miss you tremendously.
Jason Moser, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
If there's one theme that has emerged on conference calls this earnings season, it's the number of times CEOs have used some version of the phrase artificial intelligence. But one company isn't just talking the talk, and they may have a real tailwind from generative AI. Ricky Mulvey has more.
Generative AI has some exciting possibilities, but some companies are going to take a hit as this change shakes out. Joining us now to talk about some of the companies who may be feeling that risk from those chatbots is Motley Fool analyst Maylin Quinn. Welcome.
Hi, Ricky. Great to be here.
Great to see you.
Great to see you.
So it's really tough, I think, to guess what the ripple effects of generative AI are going to be. Kind of reminds me of those old newspaper cartoons when they would envision the future and you would see helicopter spinners on top of cars and elevators up to Mars. But as we think about the future of generative AI, what are the signs to you that a company could face a real threat from those chatbots?
A company could face real threats from ChatGPT or other language models if their business model is exposed to essentially AI's language modeling skills. So some of these professions include copywriters, tutors, copy editors, consultants, or if a business is exposed to AI's image and video generation skills, such as graphic designers and artists, and even voice narration. There are now AI tools that let you upload an audio sample of anyone you want. It could be Ariana Grande, and then ask it to narrate text or sing, and it'll sound just like Ariana Grande. So you can have AI read anything in someone's voice. And you'll notice that many of the tasks that I had mentioned, these are tasks that people would typically use websites like Fiverr and Upwork for. These are two companies that definitely are at risk from the proliferation and the advancements in AI. But Fiverr and Upwork, they have a pretty diverse set of categories and tasks that they facilitate on their platform. So I don't think AI is an existential risk to these two companies just yet. There are other companies, however, like Chegg, the homework help platform, whose business model relies solely on a pretty straightforward task, which is explaining the answers to homework problems. This is something that AI can already do well and can do for free. So I do not have high hopes for Chegg's ability to keep up with this trend without it completely reinventing its business model.
Yeah, Chegg, the education tech company, basically you could plug in homework problems and they'll give you detailed solutions. In its latest quarter, CEO Dan Rosenzweig said that ChatGPT was impacting customer acquisition, but not necessarily retention. So the retention numbers were still strong. They can still keep their customers. And it's going to introduce something called Chegg Mate, which they are describing as homework help with ChatGPT. Apparently, it's better to have their proprietary data set with ChatGPT to help people with homework. But I don't know if that's enough of a moat or if that data set can be easily replicated by OpenAI and what ChatGPT already has access to.
Yeah, that's a very fair concern. I generally agree. And I actually had used Chegg in college. So I'll explain how it works quickly for members who might be unfamiliar. Basically, it's used by students and they pay a monthly membership. So right now the highest tier costs $20 a month. And that includes a Q&A area where you can ask questions to tutors, which on the platform they call experts. And this membership also includes, explanations for homework problems and popular textbooks. And to put it bluntly, almost everything you can use Chegg for, you can use ChatGPT for. In fact, GPT is even nicer for homework because, like I mentioned, it's free, but it's also unlimited. So with Chegg, you're limited to 20 questions a month to ask these experts. And 20 questions might sound like a lot, but I remember encountering this limit a lot in college. And I remember students would try to work around it by asking multiple questions in one post. And then the experts would get really annoyed and explain that you can only ask, one question at a time. I think because they only get paid per post that they respond to. But with ChatGPT is you can really ask it an unlimited amount of questions. You can ask it to dumb things down for you. You can ask follow-ups. You can ask it to go in as much detail as you need to really understand the problem that you're trying to work through. And if I were a student, it really wouldn't even be a question that I'd be using GPT instead of Chegg for homework help. And there's something really funny that I want to share. I had actually asked a series of questions on Chegg about 3 years ago. And in the past month, I've been getting notifications that these questions have been finally answered. They had been unanswered all these years, and they've just now been answered. And so I wonder if that means that perhaps there is not enough of an inflow of questions on the platform because students are going to straight to GPT. So maybe in order to get paid, experts are, you know, scrubbing the platform for old questions that have gone unanswered. Or maybe it's just that it's so easy. It's just a matter of copying and pasting into GPT a question that experts are going back and answering questions that might have been too complicated. Yeah, just a funny observation. And I actually did go back to one of those questions that I had asked, and I inputted it into ChatGPT because I was curious, and it gave me a pretty thorough explanation. So you touched on this. I don't see their new customer growth improving much at all, even with the addition of this new GPT solution. Even with they have had pretty solid retention, I don't see them being able to sustain this as the current generation graduates from college and there's no new cohort to replace them. I don't think it'll be able to pull this off, and I'm not exactly sure what this like mysterious proprietary data entails. Chegg hasn't exactly spelled it out, and it hasn't explained why exactly this data will enable it to come out with something more powerful than ChatGPT. The way that I see it is that homework is homework, and unless it's a written prompt, there's usually only one answer to a homework question. And so it could be that Chegg is implying that it can come out with even more accurate answers than GPT with its data, because GPT is known to sometimes spit out false information. But you know, ChatGPT is only getting better, and if I were a student, I would still be inclined to start with ChatGPT.
Yeah, it's got a churn problem, because in most cases your max life for a customer on Chegg is about 4 years. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm always hesitant about full paradigm shifts, right? No one's ever going to go to the gym again would be an example, or hotels shutting down during the pandemic. No one's ever going to get out of their home again. Chegg is down more than 90% from pandemic highs, and it's facing slower revenue growth. It does have a high retention. It does solve a problem. It's also free cash flow positive and is trading for less than 10 times earnings. Is this a value story? Do you think this is a buying opportunity for long-term investors?
I don't. And the Warren Buffett quote comes to mind that goes like, it's far better to buy a wonderful company at a fair price than a fair company at a wonderful price. Chegg is free cash flow positive, but it has a high level of debt. It has $1.2 billion in debt, which is actually more than its market cap right now. And I think it's going to have to make a lot of investments as it works out how it's going to get ahead of these advancements in AI. Plus, it's going to have to pay OpenAI for API access for its Checkmate feature. And I know that this won't be cheap. I think this will bring down its margins for a while. So I would rather hold off, and I'd rather wait to see whether anything actually materializes in Chegg's plans for Checkmate.
When you think of the signs of a company that could experience more of a long-term tailwind from generative AI, and you know, maybe the CEO is not just filling in the AI square on every analyst's bingo card right now, what are the signs that of those companies that could be seeing those long-term tailwinds?
If they are working to adapt and incorporate AI into their business in a way that makes sense and in a way that still gives it an unrivaled value proposition compared to ChatGPT. And I actually think of Duolingo in this way, the language learning app. They're rolling out something called Duolingo Max, which is powered by GPT. And this will couple Duolingo's unique proprietary data. This is data which Duolingo has actually explained. This data includes info on the best ways different categories of users learn and stay engaged on the platform, you know, which order to ask questions in to different users in order to optimize their learning and keep them on the platform. This isn't data that GPT has. But even more exciting, Duolingo Max will allow users to have role play conversations in either text or speech with a tutor in the language that they're learning. And the speech part, I think, is what's critical, because this gives people a low stakes way to practice speaking a language. I used to actually pay a tutor on Fiverr $10 for 30 minutes. Super cheap, by the way, but I stopped doing that because I got so embarrassed. We would essentially have conversations in French, but I had to keep saying, you know, can you repeat that? Or I would mingle in, you know, English words in my sentences because I didn't know how to say them in French. I just got so embarrassed and I felt that it wasn't exactly productive. I think a lot of, you know, beginners, even introverts, even advanced language learners who just want, you know, a speaking partner in their pockets, I can see a lot of people opting for Duolingo Max, especially as it is combined with Duolingo's data on how people optimally learn languages, and especially once Duolingo makes this feature available for more languages.
It's also a completely different service, right? Like, you're looking for a singular text-based solution with Chegg in most cases.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And with Duolingo, it's more of that service where Google translates significantly better. You can even use Google Lens to translate signs around the world into your preferred language.
Yeah.
But I don't think there's going to be a decrease, or maybe there will be a decrease, but I think there always will be a demand for people to learn different languages to connect with others in a more human-to-human way.
Absolutely. And you know what? Duolingo does it so well. It's really got that gamified system down to a T. It's almost made it addictive to learn a language. I mean, there's a competitive aspect to it with their scoreboard, and they're really good about those notifications that they send you. I mean, there are memes about it. They'll send like a literal crying Duo bird and something really sad, like, oh, like, you're not leaving, are you? Like, come back and learn Spanish. But it works. Their marketing has worked really well for them. So yeah, Duolingo's data to me makes a lot of sense. And it's always been one of their moats. So I'm excited to see them couple that with ChatGPT.
Baylin Quinn, appreciate your time and your insight.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Ricky.
As always, people on the program may have interest in the stocks they talk about, and the Motley Fool may have formal recommendations for or against, so don't buy or sell stocks based solely on what you hear. I'm Chris Hill. Thanks for listening. We'll see you tomorrow.